हरि ओम कृष्ण हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
page 11 So Srila Prabhupada describes these pastimes in his purports to verse 37. After killing Narakasura, Lord Krishna visited the palace of Narakasura accompanied by Satyabhama. He went to Indraloka also with Satyabhama, and he was received by Satyadevi, who introduced her to the mother of the demigods, Aditi. Aditi was very much pleased with Satyabhama, and she blessed her with the benediction of permanent youth as long as Lord Krishna remained on the earth. Aditi also took her with her to show her the special prerogatives of the demigods and the heavenly planets. Bad idea. When Satyabhama saw the Parijata flower, she desired to have it in her palace at Dwarka. After that, she came back to Dwarka along with her husband and expressed her willingness to have the Parijata flower at her palace. Satyabhama's palace was especially bedecked with valuable jewels, and even in the hottest season of summer, the inside of the palace remained cool, as if air-conditioned. She decorated her palace with various flags, heralding the news of her great husband's presence there. Once, along with her husband, she met Draupadi, and she was anxious to be instructed by Draupadi in the ways and means of pleasing her husband. Draupadi was expert in this affair because she kept five husbands, the Pandavas, and all were very much pleased with her. On receipt of Draupadi's instructions, she was very much pleased and offered her good wishes and return to Dwarka. She was the daughter of Satrajit. After the departure of Lord Krishna, when Arjuna visited Dwarka, all the queens, including Satyabhama and Rukmini, lamented for the Lord with great feeling. At the last stage of her life, she left for the forest to undergo severe penance. Satyabhama instigated her husband to get the Parijata flower from the heavenly planets, and the Lord got it even by force from the demigods, as a common man secures things to please his wife. As already explained, the Lord had very little to do with so many wives to carry out their orders like an ordinary man. But because the queens accepted the high quality of devotional service, namely, administering the Lord all comforts, the Lord played the part of a faithful and complete husband. No earthly creature can expect to have things from the heavenly plant kingdom, especially the Parijata flowers, which are simply to be used by the demigods. But due to their becoming the Lord's faithful wives, all of them enjoyed the special prerogatives of the great wives of the denizens of heaven. In other words, since the Lord is the proprietor of everything within his creation, it is not very astonishing for the queens of Dwarka to have any rare thing from any part of the universe. So the same point as before is that it's by devotion that the Lord is interacting. Because otherwise, there's nothing to gain. In other words, sense gratification is not interesting to the Lord. Because, how do you say? sense gratification is limited in how much you can gain from it. Because it's not dynamic, it's not interactive. I mean, we make it that seem that way. You know, all the discussions, the advertisement. But it's not, because it's simply senses engaged with the environment. So there will be, of course, some kind of experience will be there. But the difficulty is it's only lasts as long as the interaction with the situation is there. As soon as that stops, it's not functioning. So the senses, sense objects, their circle is only in their contact, because it's having that mechanical element to it. But on the platform of rasa, I mean, the higher elements of rasa, then the emotional elements are there. That has more of a taste. It has more lasting effect. And then when it's on the transcendental platform in devotion, that has a permanent effect. So the Lord, having no shortage, why would sense gratification be of interest? Right? It's interest to us because we're not the source of rasa. We're not the source of happiness. Right? He is. So we're trying to get that, just like we're always trying to control. But for Krishna, always controlling is not actually that fun. Right? We'll think it's great, but he doesn't think so. Because he already is. Does that make sense? So, someone who doesn't have is always trying to get. So that's us. We're not God, we never will be, but we're always trying for that position. But Krishna is God. So it's not like it's something important or interesting. That's just who he is. You know what I'm saying? In this world, someone has a position, you can say, well, I am this. For how long? Right? The person is a king, but for how long? Right? Longest maximum until he leaves his body. But generally we see, you know, 25 years is pretty standard within the material world for being a king. If someone is a king for 25 years, he's doing okay. He's pretty average. Some of them only lasted a couple of days, you know? Like that. So that's what you get. But here, he's God, always was, is, and always will be. It is no threat. There's no rival. Right? There's no possibility of that changing. Right? So, therefore, for him, just his existence is already happiness. Right? Not engaging the senses is already happiness. Just his existence is happiness. Right? The material world existence is not happiness, so you have to add to it. But his existence is already happiness. So now he's adding to this then interaction with the devotees. That's what's interesting. Now, to interact, then to get to have that variety of taste, then you have the rasas. And each rasa has its own particular, nature, how it unfolds, all the aspects that support it, all the variety that is there. And so Krishna being perfect, whatever comes from him is perfect. Because we have to remember, these rasas are coming from Krishna. He is rasa. So, it coming from Krishna, it's perfect. So the expression of the conjugal rasa, parental rasa, friendship, servitorship, neutrality, is perfect. It's complete. It doesn't need anything more. So, therefore, then, these are the ways in which Krishna interacts with the devotees. So it's not that he needs to be a husband and have that interaction. It's the medium for expressing rasa, right, through the conjugal flavor. Does that make sense? So there's a flavor, then there's the forms and activities of the flavor. That makes sense. You're always agreeing to have that, yes.
Alright, so Krishna being the source of everything. Now where is the material rasa coming from?
It's the reflection.
Of the original.
Yes. You know, just like in the mirror. You know, you see yourself in the mirror. That's the reflection. So it does whatever you do, but it doesn't have, there isn't actually any experience to be gained from it. You know what I'm saying? You can look at it and there's something, but it's more interacting with the real person. But for the reflection can't actually get anything from the reflection. You know what I'm saying? The head in the mirror gets no benefit from the fingers scratching it. So therefore the Lord empowers everything so it appears as if you, the soul, are getting something. But you're not getting anything from the material energy. You're getting it from Krishna. Right? You know, somebody, you know, how you say, jumps out of the airplane with their parachute and all that. And, you know, the experience that they get from that, it's not coming from the air. It's not coming from the ground. It's not coming from, you know, the ether, it's not coming from anything. It's coming from Krishna. But we attribute it that this experience I'm getting is coming from this situation. You know, the wind in the face, the, you know, the thing, the speed, the, you know, that you can see everything, you know. Then you have the also the element of the excitement of the ground is getting closer moment by moment, you know. And then there's also that, you know, probably slight anxiety that the chute is going to open. You know. And that it does, and when you actually come down, you're not going to end up in a tree somewhere or something like that, you know. And yeah, end up in some rich man's backyard in a tree, so you can't touch the ground, and his six Doberman pinchers come out to greet you. Yeah, so, you know, so there's always these little underlying, you know. So the thing is all those experiences, all that rasa is actually Krishna. So this is the illusion. We think I'm getting it from this. The skydiving is giving me this experience. No, it's Krishna's giving the experience. Right? Does that make sense? So now, that experience comes through forms and action. But those forms, that experience is not coming from the material energy, and the forms and actions aren't created by the material energy. They're coming from the formal cause. They're coming from the internal potency. And so that's reflected here. So the original cause, that's Krishna, that's that desire. And then his energies carry out his desire. So in that way they're non-different, but they're different. So the original cause and formal cause are different. Yes?
We do something once, and the experience or the feeling is more than what it would be if we do it the second time.
Yes.
So what's the explanation for that? Is it anything to do with Krishna's potency?
No, it's just that in the spiritual world, then they don't need to do something again because it's already been done. And that experience lasts eternally. Here, the desire to do it again is there because it's temporary nature. It no longer has the same effect. Right? But in the spiritual world, you do something, the effect of it, that whatever is gained from it, lasts eternally. So then there's no need to do it again. Right? So then what would happen is a variation of that is done again. Is done. In other words, rasa is to be experienced, but it has all those subtle, unlimited nuances. Right? And so that can go on eternally. Mm-hmm. And so you're just adding and adding and adding. Like I said, Radharani never cooks the same preparation twice. That doesn't mean that it's not, it may be within the same category with a subtle difference. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, okay, she made potatoes, that's it, she'll never cook potatoes again. You know? It just means that the how she cook, there'll be some difference in the combination and all that. And you can do that unlimitedly. So that's the... So there's no need, because it goes on. But here, everything's temporary, so you try to do it again because it doesn't. But then it doesn't have that newness, that freshness, that excitement. So all those things are lacking. You know what I'm saying? So that's why in the material world, the Vedic culture focuses on duties. Because then you'll get a satisfaction from performing your duties that's on the second level of rasa. Partiva, swargiya rasa. Because that's on the emotional platform. Because what you'll get from the senses is not going to be the same again. Because the senses are actually dealt with by the emotions. Now, stability and all that gives a particular taste. That's why people like to have a house and have a bank balance. And, you know that their relationships, people are committed. And all those kind of things. So duties create that, and that gives that taste. So you can get satisfaction from the material world. Happiness is not something one should worry about. Right? That comes and goes. Satisfaction is something that's stable. You can be satisfied, but you can't say, I am happy. You know, because when you say, oh, how are you? Yeah, no, how are you doing? You happy? You know, yeah, means at that moment there's nothing getting in the way that I wouldn't call myself happy. You know, because the answer is, It's 51%. You know, it's okay. You know, and if it's 49, it could be worse. You know, it's like, you know, things are going wrong, but they're, you know, understandable or controllable wrong, or you know, you can tolerate it wrong. You know, so that's actually considered good. You know, if the things that are going wrong are, you can handle them and nothing's really getting in the way that, you know, that you can't, you know, then that's considered like good. You know. Yeah. It's interesting just how the older one gets, the more one starts to use these phrases. You know, yeah, it could be worse, or, you know, yeah, nothing to complain about, and you know, when you're younger, it's always, yeah, awesome, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like that, but as you go, it slightly adjusts, you get a little more realistic about it, but the point is that the idea that it should be perfect is the nature of the soul, so it's not actually a fault. It's only a fault because it's applied to the material. So when you say about, you know, the youth is not realistic, that's just because you can't apply that kind of romantic idealism to the material world. But that there's a desire for that, that's real. That's why there's that focus is on youth and that energy and that desire and enthusiasm of youth. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, the idea to be happy, you know, by being with people you want to be with and situations you want to be in is fine. Just you're not supposed to be doing that here. Right? That's all. But the concept is good. He just has to do it in the spiritual world, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not like, you know, let's say you go to, you know, some program at some big hall, okay? And, you know, during the intermission, you go to use the, you know, the bathroom. And so then you go into the bathroom and, you know, go into one of those little stalls and then decide, wow, this is a great place. So you set up your whole existence in there, you know, your home, and, you know, get out your, you know what I'm saying? You get a set up your internet, you know, connection, you know, do the whole thing, you know. It's a, so the concept of having a nice, stable place is okay, but not there. Right? So in the same way as having this idea of this concept, that's good, but not in the material world. So that's all this is to convince us that this is the wrong place. What we want is fine, but here is not the place you can have it.
Maharaj?
Yes?
It seems that the lifestyle of sadhana bhakti regulates our life in such a way that we perform the same activities on a daily basis.
Yes.
So should we strive to make variety within that to
practice? No, because that's what we're saying, is that real variety is not here. It's there, because you're dealing with dead matter. You know what I'm saying? It's like here you have, you know, this rock. It's got a little point on the top, right? You know? This one kind of has a point, but it's a little bit, you know, got a round thing like that. This one is completely round, you know, so you could say, wow, so much variety, but, you know, it's still pretty dead. You know? No, see, the whole idea is to become regulated, because in regulation, then you will be exposed to the appropriate situations and activities and, how you say, proper attitudes. Because you're trying to develop those. So what's around you is trying to distract you from that. So sadhana bhakti creates an environment in which it's the same regular thing so that you can have those proper attitudes. Because you see, the things connected with, well, you have both. The pancharatric elements, then those would be the most regular, you know. Then the other aspects, means your direct aspects of Bhagavat, those are regular, but they can function well even if it's not always a regular environment. The more you get situated, let's say the more you're situated in chanting, you can chant anywhere. In the beginning, maybe not. You need a more controlled environment. But now within these, then you're always going to have a variety. Like cooking for the deities, it's always different. Dressing the deities is different. The scents you get, the kirtans you do. All this has the variety. So variety is already worked in. But the environment is stable, because even we'll say, oh, we want variety. And, you know, devotional life is so, you know, that's always the same. It's so boring. But take anybody's life. I mean, anybody. Doesn't matter who it is. Their life is always going to be the same. And it'll have a certain amount of variety in it that's enough to keep them interested. Even the craziest person, he always does the same crazy things. He doesn't do different crazy things. He always does the same crazy thing, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the punk's going down the street in the car, right? Now, either the top is down. If it can go down, it will be down. It doesn't matter what season. If it can't go down, all the windows will be open, right? And it's not that the windows are open, they're sitting inside comfortably. They're halfway out their windows, waving their arms and yelling and screaming, right? You know? And the problem is the guy driving is doing that also. There's a weakness in this, right? So they, you know, so you can say, well, they're just letting go, they're being crazy, everyone else is such a square, but they always do the same thing. It's such a cliche. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, is you can take any particular group and it's always the same cliche. Why can we call them goths? They always do the same thing. Right? White punks, they're the same. Right? Hippie, they're the same. Suits, same. You know what I'm saying? You know, the how you say, the artiste, same. You know, they all good. Although they're so different, their eyes, you know, but they're always the same. You know? Does that make sense? You're going to see an artist in a fedora? No. Right? A beret maybe, you know, something else, but not a fedora. Right? Now, let's say you have a mafioso. Fedora? Must. You know what I'm saying? These just fit. They go with the modes. So what it is they are in a particular group of modes, and every mode has some variety. Otherwise, if it doesn't, you get bored too quick. You know? And basically, you're going to be in the material world eternally until you figure out this place is a dump. Right? And so there has to be some system to keep you busy. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Ever try to manage a room full of bored kids? That's insane. Right? So, you can imagine a universe full of bored living entities? That would be bad. Right? Yeah, so it's just, you don't do that. You don't do that. So, regulation, everybody regulates their life. Right, the guy gets up at 9 o'clock. He always gets up at 9 o'clock. You know, today was different. He got up at 7. You know, or I was so tired I slept until 12. But otherwise, he gets up at 9. You know what I'm saying? So it's always the same. There's no difference. They make it out that it's different because you can say my life's different than his life, and I wouldn't want to be doing that. But it's always the same. You know what I'm saying? You know, it means you're going, you know, natural, you know, like that. So you have your carrot juice, right, in the morning, you know, or maybe some orange juice, some grape. Anybody has pumpkin juice? You know how much vitamin A is in a pumpkin? There's nothing has more vitamin A. Why not pumpkin juice? It's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? What about squash juice? You know? You know, it's not going to happen. So it's always the same. Well, yeah, so that's the whole... It's always the same. You know, you want to be different. You know, they got the burger. Why not put the round one on the bottom and the flat one on the top? You know, why not put the sesame seeds on the inside? No, they just don't. Does that make sense? So they don't do that. So it's always the same, you know. And now and again, someone comes up with a little variety, and the whole world, you know, is in ecstasy, you know, for a few short time, and then it's, you know. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. So that regulation then is important because we'll go back to the whole point was. The mode of goodness means it'll be regular, because from the mode of goodness, when it's regular, then you can get understanding. From that, then that knowledge, you can get an understanding of Krishna consciousness. So that's why the emphasis is on duty, because anything you do in the material world will get boring. So you perform your duties, then you get the taste that I'm performing my duty. So the mode of goodness will give you a taste.
Beginning of the discussion, you're mentioning how we actually think it's the material energy which is giving us this.
Yes.
Many times when we're listening to an explanation about the material world, we very quickly see that everything has no value, it's all Maya.
Yes.
And it's very hard to find a balance where you know it's not what it's giving you, but it is a duty that you should do it.
Yes.
So that balance.
It's a matter of changing. It's just like when you. When you're sick, then there's some kind of regulation that you follow to become healthy, right? So the principle is that we're looking for happiness within the material. It's a mistake. We should be looking for happiness in the spiritual, but we don't know how to do that. We don't distinguish, because we can't tell the difference between matter and spirit. That's why we're functioning in the material platform. If we could, we wouldn't be doing it. So, therefore, then in the interim is a period where we're practicing the one, but still connected with the other. right? In other words, one's sick, so one's eating a special diet for being sick. So you're eating food, but it's still food that's connected with sick. But once you get healthy, then the food is connected with what's with health. Does that make sense? Yeah. The same applies to the Yadavas, who also enjoy the special prerogatives of the demigods by dint of their pure devotion. The great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of Lord Shri Krishna, always remain fearless in every respect, and therefore their feet trample over the Sudharma assembly house, which the best demigods deserve, but which was taken away from them. 38. Srila Prabhupada explains, those who are directly servitors of the Lord are protected by the Lord from all fearfulness, and they also enjoy the best of things, even if they are forcefully accumulated. The Lord is equal in behavior to all living beings, but he is partial to his pure devotees. Right? He's equal, in other words, he maintains everybody, but he's partial to the devotees because they reciprocate with him. They have that affection. That's the whole point, is that because of that. So, in other words, everybody needs to be taken care of. He's doing that equally. But those who interact with him, he reciprocates. So that's the special favor.
And reciprocate with the feeling.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, let us say you have a cultured person. So anybody he meets, he deals with nicely. Mm-hmm. But according to how they respond, they may get beyond just general pleasantries, like that. So that's the point, is that Krishna's culture, he deals with everybody equally. But because the devotees deal with affection, he reciprocates that. So that's that special mercy. Because others are going to get, but according to their karma. Here it's relationship. So then we see that things are there that technically belong to someone else. Here, in this case, it's all the demigods. You know, so the finities. You know, it's just like, okay, Sachi. Okay, now we have Sachi and Indra. Okay? Now, and in this case, we have the assembly hall, and we have the Parijata. Okay? Who's going to be more into the assembly hall?
Indra.
And who's going to be more into the Parijata? Right? So, and here, who has the Parijata? Right? So, and who has the assembly hall? Right? The men. Right? Is that what it says? So it just, it works out nice. This is the best, so he wants the best for them. Now, in doing it, he could just manifest the Parijata or like this. But the point is the demigods also sometimes get proud of their material facilities and they forget it's also coming from the Lord. So, at least if they don't see it, that it's the Lord's potency in the way of the transcendental element, at least they're supposed to see that the ownership, it belongs to the Lord, and their function and incapacity of servitorship. Because otherwise, he could have come there and said, my wife wants a Parijata flower, and hey, you're the supreme, you take whatever you want. But that's not how it works. You know? It's like, oh, this is only for the demigods. But who said it's only for the demigods? Krishna. Right? And now they're telling Krishna, you know, how it works. You know, it's not exactly like that. So therefore, then the Parijata and the Sudharma assembly house are forcibly taken because of their pride. So it humbles them. But at the same time, it will only be there as long as Krishna is manifesting his pastimes. As soon as the pastimes are over, then all these go back. But still, there's that effect that the Lord took it. And so he's the supreme. Because otherwise, if that devotion was there in a greater degree, he wouldn't have to deal like that. You know, it's just like us. We get some subtleties on what we should be doing. And then, you know, we think about it, it's nice, or maybe we'll rationalize a bit, you know. Then it comes a little stronger, you know, like that. And that, now we really start rationalizing, you know, like that. But maybe thinking about, you know, and then if we don't still respond, then something more external happens. You know, the situation and everything like that. So it could have been worked out when it was subtle. But we tend to not. We tend to wait until it's
gross.
It becomes quite gross, right? So at that point, then we go, oh, Krishna is trying to tell us something. You know, and that's on a better day, you know. On the other, oh, why is Krishna doing this to me? I'm a devotee, and this and that. It's kind of like, you know. Yeah.
So Maharaj, it's good to be proactive.
Be?
Proactive.
Or to be aware, conscious. Then we can see, you know, what's coming up.
Yes.
Yeah. The Lord is equal in behavior to all living beings, but he's partial to his pure devotees, being very affectionate towards them. The city of Dwarka was flourishing, being enriched with the best things in the material world, best of things in the material world. The state assembly house is constructed according to the dignity of the particular state. In the heavenly planets, the state assembly house, called Sudharma, was deserving of the dignity of the best of the demigods. Such an assembly house is never meant for any state on the globe, because the human being on the earth is unable to construct it. However far a particular state may be materially advanced. But during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on the earth, right? Because here is that the demigods means it's done by mantras and other things like that, so they can't do this here like that. But during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on the earth, the members of the Yadu family forcibly brought the celestial assembly house to earth and placed it at Dwarka. They were able to use such force because they were certain of the indulgence and protection of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Right? Because on their own they wouldn't do it. But, you know, it's like the little kid sometimes, you know, he ventures away from the parents and says something and this and that because he's sure that they're still back there. Like that, yeah. In other words, the Lord was provided with the best of things in the universe by his pure devotees. Lord Krishna was provided with all kinds of comforts and facilities available within the universe by the members of the Yadu dynasty. And in return, such servants of the Lord were protected and fearless. So you see here is that how it works. The devotees end up with all the nicest things because they want those nicest things for Krishna. Right? So by Krishna's grace, then they're able to acquire those, and they get them for Krishna. Right? So in other words, this Parijata tree, the idea is that it's in the courtyard, then those flowers can be used for Krishna, that fragrance is for Krishna. Right? But, you know, from Krishna's point, he'll put the devotee as the prominent. Right? And the Sudharma, then the Yadus are thinking, now here's Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord, so he should be in the best of assembly houses. So then they take Indra's, right? They're not going to take Brahma's is better, but he's a Brahmin. You're not going to take his, right? You know, so you're going to take from the Kshatriyas, right? So of the Kshatriyas, then Indra's will be the best, right? Better than Varuna's, better than Yama's, better than Vaishnavas. I mean, they'll all have very nice, but Indra's will be the best. So they'll take that one. A forgetful, conditioned soul is fearful, but a liberated soul is never fearful. Just as a small child, completely dependent on the mercy of his father, is never fearful of anyone. Fearfulness is a sort of illusion for the living being when he is in slumber and forgetting his eternal relation with the Lord. Since the living being is never to die by his constitution, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:20, then what is the cause of fearfulness? A person may be fearful of a tiger in a dream, but another man who is awake by his side sees no tiger there. The tiger is a myth for both of them, namely the person dreaming and the person awake, because actually there is no tiger. But the man forgetful of his awakened life is fearful, whereas the man who has not forgotten his position is not at all fearful. Thus the members of the Yadu dynasty were fully awake in their service to the Lord, and therefore there was no tiger for them to be afraid of at any time. Even if there were a real tiger, the Lord was there to protect them. Right? So, the person in Krishna consciousness, there is nothing of fear. Right? So this concept that there's fearfulness in the world, that's the tiger. We've created it. Because actually those on the transcendental platform, there is no material world. It may be inferior energy. You know, just like the, let's say, the basement or the attic or something like this is inferior to, you say, your living room. But it's still just energy. You can't get as much from it. You know, like in the attic, there's no place to sit down. You know, it's all dusty. It's you know, it's not organized nicely. You know, you want something, you got to dig around for it for a while. You know, in the living room, you know where everything is. It's comfortable. It's designed like that. So, in other words, it's inferior. But this idea that there's this separate existence isn't actually there. There is no such thing as a separate existence. It's all Krishna. That's the illusion. Right? So the tiger is the illusion that there's something other than the Lord. That's the... Yes?
Would the person, the transcendental person, still make a preference to utilize the living room rather than the attic?
What's your purpose? No, you know what I'm saying? This person that you've given an example of, what's their purpose?
Well, if they're faced with an option...
No, but what's the purpose? Why a living room? Why an attic? What are they there for?
Well, to be utilized in service to Krishna.
Okay, but...
So a living room is better suited for that?
Yeah. The attic, that's where you rummage around and find things that might be useful. Right? So, therefore, those from the spiritual world come here, rummage around, and see if they can find souls that are interested in the spiritual world. You know, so after going through a lot of riffraff, then you find one here and there. You know what I'm saying? Because what happens is one could complain and say, oh, how are you calling the people riffraff? We're not calling the people, because the people are the soul. The conditioning is the riffraff. So most people think they're the conditioning. So all you're dealing with is riffraff. Right? So those who actually can understand, I'm not the body, I'm the soul, then you're dealing with people. So those are the ones you're looking for. Right? Means you're approaching everybody. But only those who respond on the platform of the soul, then you can actually deal with. Because they accept the transcendental position, so then you can deal with them in reality. The other ones, you have to deal with them in the illusion. So there, you're pleasant, you're nice. Right? Just because you go into the attic, you find something that you don't need at the moment, doesn't mean you deal with it badly. Right? You know, you find that, you know, your grandmother's vase that, you know, you bring out on special occasions, but now it's not a special occasion, doesn't mean that you drop it on the floor. You understand? That's stupid. So that's what happens, is the devotees think, oh, all this is nonsense, so they deal with it badly. Why would you deal with it badly? And said, why would you be rough? Why would the old off? Well, if I don't get any benefit from it, I deal with it roughly. Where does that come from? That comes from the mode of passion. I get a benefit, I deal nice. I don't get a benefit, why do I care? The point is if it's all Krishna's, then I deal with it nicely. But I only have to deal with those things that are important for doing the service to Krishna. That's prescribed duties. So it's actually very, very simple. We make it complicated. You know, because of the modes of nature. Is that okay? Right. Yeah, so in other words, if you're hosting Krishna, then there's the living room. If it's getting extra facilities for the living room, you know, to increase that, then you go look in the attic. You understand? Yeah. Yes.
It seems that the fear is the inherent quality of those who came to the material world.
Yes, yes.
Because then Brahma, the first emotion he experienced, he was fearful of the darkness.
Yes.
And we all got it from him.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to be fearless.
Yeah. It's going back to the original. Him, not me. He made the universe. What can I do? But it's, yes. But that's because it's the material, because he's the first position of the living entity actually in material consciousness. So then fear, because fear means you don't know the relationship with the Lord. You don't know your position. You don't actually know who you are. So that creates fear, because there's no security. If you know who you are and who the Lord is in that relationship, there's no insecurity. But as soon as that's forgotten, then immediately there's insecurity. So now we spend unlimited lifetimes trying to address that fear. Okay, if I have a house, then that fear will go away. If I have money, that'll go away. If I have friends or relatives or a position in society or power or authority, you know, or enjoyment, sense enjoyment, then that fear will go away. But it still doesn't go away. You know, it may seem to on this side just because you're absorbed in the thing, but then as soon as it's been around a while, then...
So it's not any less.
It's in the material. No, it's just that idea that it's less, that hope that it's less. You know, there's always that it will be less. If I get this, then it'll all be great. But as soon as you get it, then it's kind of like nothing changes. You know, and it's kind of like, wow, what happened? You know. So, but the materialist is no. Okay, I got that. Now I need. They just immediately bridge to the next thing. You know. You know, all means that they've done a lot of work to get it, so they'll relax from that, but it's not that they're enjoying the thing. They work so hard, and, you know. But it's not that you're, you know, it's just like the lady has, you know, 10 bags, you know, each one better looking than the other, right? You know, and it's, so it's been a hard day, you know, a tough day. So then she and friends may sit down in their favorite little, you know, place and get their little, you know, snack or whatever it is. You know, but so it appears that they're enjoying what they've got, but they've only enjoyed that they got it. They're not enjoying what's in the bag. Who's enjoying it? Right? But it's that, you know, we were so, oh, wow, that was, this. Yeah, you guys had, oh, did you see I had to fight over, you know, it's like, you know, you two people go for the same pair of shoes at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, it's tough. It's a hard one, right, you know. So, so now you just have to work out, now, which would be more beneficial, having the shoes but spending time, you know, in the penitentiary for having gouged out her eyes, or losing it and then thinking that, you know, the pain of I didn't get them. So, you know, there's tough decisions to be made, right? So that whole thing going through there, you know, this card didn't work, you've already maxed it out, then, you know, the other cards still work. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of various anxieties and stuff like that. And, you know, so when you sit down, then you're talking about that it was great, oh, we got this, we got that, but you're not actually enjoying the thing. It's just you're reveling in the endeavor you made to get it. But the item itself never actually gives us any satisfaction. You have to be satisfied to be able to appreciate it. It's a separate thing. The item itself doesn't create the satisfaction. Satisfaction comes from us appreciating that, you know, Krishna's taking care. Whatever I do, my duties, whatever I get, then that's what I have. You know, so one person, as we mentioned before, one person makes the same endeavor, he gets so much, right? The man who's the billionaire is spending the same amount of time in the office as the guy who's the millionaire. It's not more time. It's not that he's 1,000 times richer, therefore he spends 1,000 times more time in the office. It's not possible. You know? So they're not spending any more time. They're just getting more results for their endeavor. That's all. Yeah. So that's it. You know, the guy that's, you know, he's rides the bicycle and delivers things in the city, he's spending the same amount of time running around on his bicycle. You know, he's getting a very small amount. Like that. So the whole point is you do your duties, And then however much is supposed to come. Like here, Krishna said that he said, what was that? What was that? As already explained, the Lord had very little to do with so many wives to carry out their orders like an ordinary man. Right? But because the queens accepted the high quality of devotional service, namely administering the Lord all comforts, the Lord played the part of a faithful and complete husband. So that means that's just part of the duties, this one takes care. So therefore there is the endeavor to get facilities, get this and that. It's part of the duties. But one only puts in how much is the appropriate amount of time for duties. Right? It shouldn't affect one's devotional service. Does that make sense? So then that way then like here, one's not endeavoring for oneself for these things, but at the same time one has all these things. Right, so the Yadavas were not endeavoring for themselves, they were endeavoring for Krishna, but they had all the facilities, whatever you could get in the universe. The best of the universe was in Dwarka. Is that okay?
Yeah, well, we can't stretch it like that, because in our case it's mixed.
It's mixed because we want to have it and enjoy it.
Yes.
But you can't do both.
Yeah.
You can either, you know, make the endeavor to enjoy it and not have it, or have it and not enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? But the point is if you have it to not enjoy it, but to use it in the Lord's service, then in connection with the Lord, it's enjoyed. But this sense that I'm going to enjoy it on its own, that's a false concept. That's what keeps us here. It's not possible. You can't do it. It's an impossible, like we said there. One has it, one can't enjoy it. Right. Let's say the lady walks into the walk-in wardrobe. Right. You push the button. Right. All the shelves come out on their own. All, you know, done. All the different shoes. I mean, there's, you know, how you say, 100 shoes there. Now, is there happiness?
No.
No. There's
anxiety.
A total anxiety. Which one to wear? And then you have added on to it is you don't know which one to wear because you saw someone else with a pair of shoes that you don't have, that's the one you wanted to wear. So that's the whole thing. You can't enjoy it. You can't have it and enjoy it. This is the illusion. We think I can have it and enjoy it. You can have it for Krishna. That way you'll enjoy it. Because Krishna doesn't have anything for his enjoyment. He has it for the devotees' enjoyment. So the devotees have it for Krishna's enjoyment. We can see in the same purport, Prabhupada explained it from both angles. Krishna is giving everything to the devotee, and the devotees are endeavoring to get everything for Krishna. So in other words, they wanted to get that for Krishna, and Krishna protected them so they could. Because according to the laws of the universe, they can't. But they got it, because they wanted it for Krishna. So that's the point. That's the point that we're holding on to. Point is that, no, but I want it and enjoy it. You can't. That's the weakness. This idea is that engaging it for someone else, that's what happens. And we have those examples in our life. In other words, the more old world ones, how you say, lifestyle is, the more one has these elements. The less, the more it's new world, the less one has. Oh, wow. I just found the Western authority for making this distinction. This old world, you know, basically is Europe and anything connected there, but new world means America. So now you can make that distinction. Yes, okay. So, otherwise I was thinking, well, it's a little weak, you know, because, okay, we'll probably, you know, assume that's over. Yeah, now we have it. Okay, good. So, old words about, you know, you do something for someone else. you know, that element of doing for someone else, then gives a higher taste than doing something for yourself. So there's always example of this. You know, there's always the parent taking care of the child. There's always something more, or going out and getting something for yourself. It's nice, but getting something for someone else that you know is, you know, going to be appreciated, has more taste. You know, even in relationship, that could be referred to. Your one is you have it, so it's not like, you know, you can't tell you, look in the mirror, yeah, you know, yeah, you're so cool, and you got your that thing for yourself, yeah, you're great, yeah. You know, it can't do that. It doesn't mean you could, but, you know. You know, but it's those moments of pleasant, known illusion. You know it's an illusion, but it's good fun, right? You know, so, but... Is that okay? Yes, sir. That's the point we're whittling away at. But that's the point it gets down to. It's just because we're fearful that if I let go, I won't be happy. But that's why the Bhagavad Gita is opening with these things. People who have let go and have become happy. Right? They've surrendered to the Lord and He's protected them. You know, so protected them from, you know, nuclear holocaust. They protected them from, you know, giving them nice facilities. You know, how you say, you know, difficult health issues, you know? Like that. You know, or Yudhisthira, you know, how you say, psychological anxieties and all those things. So, you know, your standard stuff, but just to the extreme. You know, and so they've been benefited just simply that surrender to the Lord, and it's all worked out so wonderfully. So then we can also get that same benefit. So, you know, but that's the point. So, like you said, it's mixed. So, but the thing is the mixed devotional service. The advantage is we have brought transcendence to the position we're in. That's the point of the mix, is that whatever position you're in, it can be connected. But the quality of the connection, as we improve it, the transcendental results we get are greater. And so by that connection, it itself purifies it, that we are able to appreciate a higher quality of connection. You know, in other words, it may still be mixed, but, you know, we were starting to move up through the modes, like that. And so then, to the point where we can switch it from just goodness to pure goodness. So bhakti itself nourishes itself. Bhakti itself gives the ability to take part in it, in the process. That's what's so perfect about it. So one doesn't have to worry, but as long as that progressiveness is there, that progressive mentality. So that's what we will make comments on when someone thinks, no, the position I'm in is fine. No, it's fine for the moment, yes. But it's not a fine position. Mixed devotional service is never fine. It's usable, it's workable. You know, it's just like using a knife as a screwdriver is not fine, right? You know, for the kids, it's like, what's the problem? You know, for someone who knows either, you know, how you say, screws or knows knives, it's not fine, but it works until you can get the appropriate. So that's the whole point, is we're using it. We're being practical. But it's not that position of practical has... You know, it stands on its own as good. It's good is that it's bringing you closer to reality. And so therefore, whatever the position is, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Because it can be used for the Lord. That's the position. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So in other words, one doesn't have to be an anxiety that one's engaged in mixed devotional service. One, the anxiety should be that I should never think that this is okay as a permanent situation. Like, you know, that was Prahlad Maharaj's fear, was that I would think Maya is okay. like that. But he doesn't have any fear. He means, in other words, the Shungadev and the whole situation, that doesn't bother him at all. He's worried about Maya being taking him away from his position. That's the anxiety.
I just remember one point, one reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, "Are you fearless?" He said, "Yes, when I'm chanting."
Yes. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 39 reveals the thoughts behind Maharaj Yudhishthira's next question concerning Arjuna's dejected appearance. From all angles of vision, the Maharaj inquired from Arjuna about the welfare of Dwarka. But he concluded at last, as long as Lord Shri Krishna himself was there, nothing inauspicious could happen. But at the same time, Arjuna appeared to be bereft of his bodily luster, and thus the king inquired of his personal welfare and asked so many vital questions. Maharaj Yudhishthira now addressed queries of concern to the person of his brother. "My dear Arjuna, I wonder how your health is, for you appear to have lost your bodily luster. Could this be due to your having been neglected and disrespected by others for having stayed so long at Dwarka? Has someone addressed you harshly or threatened you? Did you fail to keep a promise, or were you unable to give in charity to a deserving person? Could you not give protection to Brahmins, children, cows, women, or diseased persons that had approached you for shelter? Have you contacted a woman of low character, a one who was inferior to you? Have you taken your meal alone without providing for old men and boys that deserve to dine with you? Have you committed some other abominable act?" 39-43. In his purports to the section, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on the above-mentioned Vedic injunctions. "A Kshatriya, a rich man, is sometimes visited by persons who are in need of money. When they are asked for a donation, it is the duty of the possessor of wealth to give in charity in consideration of the person, place, and time. If a Kshatriya, a rich man, fails to comply with this obligation, he must be very sorry for this discrepancy. Similarly, one should not fail to keep his promise to give in charity. These discrepancies are sometimes causes of despondency, and thus failing, a person becomes subjected to criticism, which might also be the cause of Arjuna's plight. The Brahmanas, who are always engaged in researching knowledge for the society's welfare work, both materially and spiritually, deserve the protection of the king in all respects. Similarly, the children of the state, the cow, the diseased person, the woman, and the old man specifically require the protection of the state or a Kshatriya king. If such living beings do not get protection by the Kshatriya or the royal order or by the state, it is certainly shameful for the Kshatriya or the state. If such things had actually happened to Arjuna, Maharaj Yudhishthira was anxious to know about these discrepancies. It appears from this verse that during the time of the Pandavas, free contact between man and woman was allowed in certain conditions only. The higher caste men, namely the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, could accept a woman of the Vaishya or Shudra community. But a man from the lower caste could not contact a woman of the higher caste. Even a Kshatriya could not contact a woman of the Brahmin caste. The wife of a Brahmana is considered one of the seven mothers, namely one's own mother, the wife of the spiritual master or teacher, the wife of a Brahmana, the wife of a king, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Such contact between man and woman was known as Uttama and Adhama. Such contact of a Brahmana with a Kshatriya woman is Uttama, but the contact of a Kshatriya with a Brahmin woman is adhama, and therefore condemned. A woman approaching a man for contact should never be refused, but at the same time the discretion, as above mentioned, may also be considered. Bhima was approached by Hidimbi from a community lower than the Shudras, and Yayati refused to marry the daughter of Sukracharya because of Sukracharya's being a Brahmana. Vyasadeva, a Brahmana, was called to beget Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Satyavati belonged to a family of fishermen, but Parasara, a great Brahmana, begot in her Vyasadeva. So there's so many examples of contacts with women. But in all cases, the contacts were not abominable, nor were the results of such contacts bad. Contact between man and woman is natural. And that also must be carried out under regulative principles so that social consecration may not be disturbed or unwanted worthless population be increased for the unrest of the world. Just thinking, even the amongst the they don't understand the science, but even the materialists kind of understand this principle. It is abominable for a Kshatriya to be defeated by one who is inferior in strength or equal in strength. If one is defeated at all, he should be defeated by some superior power. Arjuna was defeated by Bhishma Dev, and Lord Krishna saved him from the danger. This was not an insult for Arjuna because Bhishma Dev was far superior to Arjuna in all ways, namely age, respect, and strength. But Karna was equal to Arjuna, and therefore Arjuna was in crisis when fighting with Karna. It was felt by Arjuna, and therefore Karna was killed, even by crooked means. Such are the engagements of the Kshatriyas. And Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired from his brother whether anything undesirable happened on his way home from Dwarka. It is the duty of a household to feed first of all the children, the old members of the family, the brahmanas, and the invalids. Beside that, an ideal household is required to call for any unknown hungry man to come and dine before he himself goes to take his meals. He is required to call for such a hungry man thrice on the road. The neglect of this prescribed duty of a householder, especially in the matter of the old men and children, is unpardonable. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is mentioning things that are, you know, things that break down the social fabric. Right? So it's going to be a story. And since the Kshatriyas are meant to maintain that, then these were principles that he felt could be a cause of Arjuna being disturbed, right? Because he's very disturbed. So therefore, it must be something serious. So he's only mentioning very serious ones. You know, because basically he doesn't want to mention the more obvious ones. So all these are there for this. So we may take them as, well, they're just rules or they're not practical. But the principles of them are very important. If they're not followed, then one gets the results. It's not that because we don't believe in it, it doesn't happen. The little child doesn't believe that they'll get burnt, and they stick their finger in the fire. What happens?
They get mad.
Right? No, but you know their innocence and their, you know, search for higher knowledge and all these, you know, trying to, you know, and the universal brotherhood of all living entities and all that, and you're still claiming that they're going to get burned. Yes. Okay. So you have practical experience. Yes. Okay. So. This is the whole point, is it doesn't matter, it's God's laws. So modern society, though they don't follow these, they get all their reactions from all these. So previously it was understood, if you have a very perfectly peaceful environment, then a little disturbance is quite major. Nowadays, where all you have is major disturbance, then, you know, the minor ones are, you know, what's the big deal?
Huh? You don't even feel.
Yeah, you don't know, like that. You know, it has to be something, you know, very big, you know. So it means it makes the news, what, you know, the nuclear reactor breaking down in Japan. But that's in Japan. Hey, we're on this side of the world, you know. So you know, ultimately it's just, it gets in the news, but it doesn't really bother you because, you know, unless you're worried about nuclear this, okay, then you have some issue to get involved in. Mm-hmm. So these are all clear? So we've discussed them, yes.
You mentioned the social fabric.
Yes.
And Kshatriyas like focus on keeping that social fabric.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes we hear from the devotees that, oh, I went to this group and there I experienced a brotherhood bigger than in our group, in our society. Is that because we're missing some elements to create that as a Kshatriya or as a group? Would there be a missing point in our social fabric?
Yeah. means there would be two approaches to this. One is, what is that group that there's a greater brotherhood than the Vaishnava society?
No, Vaishnava society, this other one, this comment is from another Vaishnava society.
My comment would be, they're the new kid on the block. You know what I'm saying? In other words, they've only touched some of the social elements of it, and therefore, and while within, you know, being within the society, you'll look at all administrative and all kinds of other elements and then feel there's a weakness. So when they go to these other, go to another group, they're not there to, they won't experience that. You stay long enough, you will. You know what I'm saying? That would be, if they say it's a brotherhood, if they say, I met a really nice devotee and he was really nice and I haven't met other devotees who dealt like that, you could say as an individual or something, but to say this whole brotherhood, just to say the brotherhood, then that already drops it down into pranamoy. Because, you know, why that would be the term, you know what I'm saying? So there will be maybe individuals. So they may, and it may be that they're, that particular group or, you know, a group is focusing on Vaishnava etiquette, so they're more careful about it. And so then you would see. Point is those who appreciate Vaishnava etiquette, you get the benefit. We have within our society so many devotees who Vaishnava etiquette is important, and being around them is very comfortable. Right, you feel very, you know, very, you know, it's, yeah, comfortable like that, very, very welcome, very part of something. But being such a broad society, then to accommodate all the different mentalities means you really have to be good at Vaishnava etiquette to do it. You have to understand the importance. So if we put too much focus on management administration, fine, but what are you managing and administrating? That's never discussed. You understand? It means it may be used as a rhetorical element to your presentation, that you bring out the devotional side because it'll look good for your presentation. But as far as the structure of management, how it functions, it's never looked at in connection with Vaishnava etiquette. You know what I'm saying? It's more of a rare thing. It's not the standard thing. Well, the Vedic, it's only looked at in consideration of the overall effect of everything. You know? Because otherwise you do one small thing here, it seems like a very minor thing in your meeting, but once it gets out of the meeting, it turns into something very big. You know, or something seems very big in your meeting, once it goes out of the meeting, it doesn't have any effect at all. So that's the whole point. It has to be based on what Guru Sadhana Shastra says. So anybody does that, they'll get the effect. Anybody doesn't do that, they won't get the effect. So it's not a matter of this society, that society. It's a matter of whoever does it, you get the effect. Like that. But this whole point of that the whole thing's like that, it's like they aren't looking that far. And if it's a matter, oh, we're not supposed to, we're supposed to then do that with this society. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, they're just new in the social field. Right? Generally, also, you also find as these other so-called groups, you know, I mean, however you want to present it, that they're dealing in a much more narrow or confined social group.
Smaller
group and also smaller variety, you know, of groups. Means, in other words, in Mayapur here there's, I think, 50 or 60, maybe it's 70 or 80, something like that, nationalities here. So when you check these other groups, then they're dealing with a very small amount. So it works very nice. Because they only they're regional, they work with the local, and so then it can be that more personal thing. But as far as the preaching machine goes, very weak. You know? Anything that is working in their machinery is because they're using what Prabhupada gave them. And so again, it's the same thing. You use the right thing, it works. You don't use it, it doesn't work. So it doesn't matter who you are. You follow etiquette, it works. You don't follow, it doesn't. You follow Prabhupada's preaching design, it works. You don't follow, it doesn't work. It's simple, you know.
Yeah, because this person was not criticizing Prabhupada as a...
Very rare anybody would dare do that.
He was just saying that over time, because perhaps he didn't have that vision.
Where does he meet them? Where does he meet? Does he live with them? You know what I'm saying? You can meet regular materialists, very pleasant, very nice, very cultured. Like that. You have them. And they're very nice. And it's not even that there's not so many of them, just you don't hear about them. Because they're not the ones, they're not the journalists, they're not the editorial writers, they're not the, you know, the guys out on Twitter, because they're gentlemen, so they don't do these things so much. Right? You know, if they do, it's very controlled, so it won't be popular. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So therefore, they exist, but it's because they're following the etiquette. But they don't necessarily know the science. The Veda gives the science. But we take it and apply it, it works. We don't take it, we don't apply it, saying, oh, it's not practical, it's not this, it's not that. You can do that, but then you won't get the results. It's not that. Nobody has gone against the Vedic principles and gotten a good result. There is no example in history. You can't find it. It's just you can't do it. It's God's rules. You can't go against gravity and it works out for you. You know what I'm saying? No, but they're flying. It's against gravity. Yeah, and how big are the motors? So in other words, they're dealing with gravity. They're having to take gravity into consideration. You know what I'm saying? So there's no such thing as not following God's laws. It's just a matter of where you want to take the authority back to. Do you want to take it back to God and the Vedas, or do you want to take it back to, you know, some author on the shelf in a self-help section? So that's the point. It's just you have your choice. Where do you want your authority? That's all. That's the choice. Just like our choice is, see it in relationship with Krishna or not, desiring Krishna or desiring Maya. That's our choice. So the same it applies here also. When you want to deal with the social and the administrative, this is your choice. You want to bring it in line with Veda or not? You could say, oh no, but you know it doesn't work. We've had 40 years to work these things out, more 50 years. So who's making the attempt? You make the attempt, you'll get the results. You don't make the attempt, you won't get the results. Right? The first time the person tried to cook, it was probably a disaster. You know? The first time the child tried to walk, it was a disaster. But the point is, you keep at it, you become good at it. You know what I'm saying? The kid stands up, falls on his face. Right? Come back 20 years later and they're a, you know, Olympic gold medalist. But there's a gap of 20 years. You know? Some of them a little less. Maybe 15. But, you know, that's the way it is. You know, so it's just a matter of time. You apply it, you see the value. So you see the value, you apply it, you get the result. You don't see the value, you don't apply it, and you don't get the result. But that's the point, is you can't do something outside God's law. It doesn't matter who it is. They can say whatever they like. It doesn't matter. That's the point. Prabhupada, someone saying about opinion. Prabhupada said, what has opinion got to do with it? You know, I said, well, in your opinion. And Prabhupada said, what's the value of my opinion? It's shastra. It's authority. It's shabda. That's a value. Jiva Goswami dedicates one of his books just to establishing authority. And that it has to be Vedic and it should be Bhagavad. Because this idea is that, well, you know, what's your opinion? You know, it's not, no, it's, I mean, so what, how do you, what's your view? What do you see? What is the angle of Krishna consciousness that you're looking at it from? This idea of, well, we got to get everybody's opinion, it's totally bogus. And it's not working. It's not working anywhere. Anywhere where something's working is because someone took a decision and the responsibility and got it done. That's the only where it's happening. There's no such thing as everyone got together and had a nice little discussion and therefore now everything's going fabulous. It doesn't exist. It's like this tiger. It's a total, absolute illusion. It doesn't exist. People will complain. No, it just, but it's not. It's not. There's no example. So that's the weakness. Is that here, Yudhishthira is pointing out is that if Arjuna broke any of these social things, then he's going to feel bad. So that's his first, you know, as Kshatriyas, that's the first thing to look at. What's their duty? Am I doing everything right? You know, am I doing? Then from there it'll go. Is that? Yes.
Thank you. From the bird up to the renunciate, it seems that most of the species are interested in getting some appreciation and some reciprocation. Is that because the jiva is inherent prakriti and does female and needs that kind of appreciation? Or is it because of our sense of insecurity?
You have both. You're going to have the living entity, by nature, being energy, is going to function in that way. So there's always going to be looking for a stable environment in which one can perform activities that make one happy. That's inherent in every living entity. But the difficulty is that from the material side, we don't know where to look for that. So it has to be in connection with Krishna. Okay. So to that degree, it's connected to Krishna, either personally or as Paramatma or Brahman, you start to get effect. So even the pious person is getting some effect because he's following God's laws. It may not be in any way to please God or anything like that, but he'll still get a benefit because at least he's acknowledged the authority of God. Even if he doesn't know that that's where the authority is coming from. A pious person, let's say giving in charity, will get the benefit of that, even if he's a total nonsense. And he has no understanding of the Lord. Still, that he's followed God's laws, that he gets money and he gives in charity, he'll get that benefit. Because that's a step towards Krishna, even though it may be very small and very far away. And the more one recognizes, then the better it gets. So it doesn't, it's not that it changes, the need of the living entity doesn't change, it's just all connected to Krishna. So then when you try to make that attempt, then because of that spiritual intent, but at the same time the material conditioning, then you get the mixed devotional elements. So then sometimes the natural expression of the soul comes out nice, sometimes not as nice. But if one keeps doing the activity connected to Krishna, it will come to the natural platform. That's why one has to be very, very careful in finding a weakness in, let's say, that aspect of appreciation. Then by addressing that, one has to be careful that the addressal of it is not also from one's own conditioning. Let us say like this. It'll be an older example, but in the morning after the Tulsi Puja, then, you know, whoever is the authorized person reads out the Sankirtan scores, everyone beats on the drum, this, that, blah. Now, one could look at it for the point of, you know, pure devotional service, there's no need to recognize, so why do they need to recognize? One could look at it that way. And then by, but then who's generally looking at it that way? Generally more something from the more intellectual, social, that conditioning will look at it that way. Because otherwise, you could look at it in pure devotional service, you will recognize the talents of the devotees. So the weakness is, why only that? Why aren't they also noticing other talents that other devotees are doing? Maybe not in that forum, but some forum that should be appreciated with all the devotees. In other words, if that's important, they do their service. It means if it's important for us as Vaishnavas to recognize, we should recognize all in some form. Or if it's a matter of, by doing that, then they become inspired and do their devotional service, then why not do that for everyone else they'll also do? But if we say, oh, well, that's materialistic, you know, they just want to hear their name being said, so we should stop that, and then by stopping that, they're not as inspired, they don't do as much service, how is that a benefit? It wasn't that we socially improved the society. Because the point of the society is to improve devotional service. So therefore, it runs. You should just see to it that the person knows that because you've done well, that wellness has come from Krishna. It's his blessing. And so if you're sincere, you can continue that. Otherwise, if not, then how many guys who are on the top of that list stay on the top of that list? You know, generally, a good run is 3 years. Money, it's shorter. So the thing is therefore, we can't become proud. So the preaching goes on. So it's there, and you add to that. So this idea is that, oh, this is a weakness, remove this. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, well, what's the proper thing? That's why I'm saying you bring it properly in line. Because then saying, this is just false ego, just recognizing, oh, it's all about money, why it's all about money and stuff like this. The element is it's not that. If it's money connected to Krishna, what's the problem? Because what's going out? This money, then books go out. So that means knowledge. Now, you may have that the person was inspired because he heard how many Lakshmi points, because it says he has kind of a Vaishya background. But the point is, his books went out. And those books go out, people read, they become devotees, and like this. So they may see the economic point of view. And that's all. But so you recognize it works.
Yeah. Now, sadhu wants to encourage everybody and understands that Krishna sees the endeavor and he will eventually work out all the inebrieties.
Yes.
At the same time, now where does the element of correction come in?
Whenever it's required. Means there should be the element of, in discussing where you know a weakness can arise, it can be discussed before it comes up. Otherwise, then as it comes up, you deal. In other words, if, let us say in this example, the person is doing Sankirtan, he's the top, and he's doing really nice, he has a very nice humble attitude, good service attitude, so there may not be no need to say something. But then another one of the book distributors, you know, he really has an attitude that he's got gifts to, you know, to Sankirtan. So then something needs to be said. But you have to say it according to, he is doing that service, he will get eternal benefit from that. People are benefiting, but he's not getting benefit from his attitude. So you have to approach it in such a way that you can address the attitude without breaking down the other part. So that takes, this whole idea is that, no, the end justifies the means. These, all these social, ismistic kind of, revolutionary things are basically useless. What's happened in the world? You know, it's still not any. In other words, we've added in so much. Okay, some of the food is organic, but so many other things are not. You know, so it's like when the greenies started back in the 60s, jumping up and down. There was probably more natural stuff at that time than there is now, though. They, you know, areas where they focus, they've made great inroads, like that. But at the same time, in other areas, you know, it's like You know, how you say, you know, there's a whole riot about cutting down the oak tree in front of the old library, like that. There was a whole thing. It took 6 months. It took, you know, hundreds of people and all this, and a few of them spent some time in jail. And, you know, but we did this, right? You know, so great. That tree is still there. You know, but then, you know, what about Brazil?
Brazil is doing good.
Yeah.
Brazil is doing good. There's a false propaganda here. We still have 92% of the original forest.
Okay.
And everybody thinks it's all gone.
Then that's good, because then no one comes there to cut it down. Just tell them it's all finished. I had a thing, the last tree, you know, and everyone comes out. And then the corporate guy in the suit with the chainsaw, like that. Like this. And, you know, it'd be big copy for a while, and then everybody would go away. Clever. In other words, the Brazilian government, you know, caring for all the different groups within the society, also wanted to better the aboriginals. So then all these people go out into the forest to cut the trees, but they never cut the trees because the aboriginals eat them. So everybody gets benefit, right? So. Yes.
This series of verses starts by Yudhisthira asking about Arjuna's health, and then goes on to talk about the discrepancies in relationship to the social factor. So is there a connection between the two, or is it just...
Well, the point is you're going to be comfortable if you're doing what you should be doing. In other words, the person will be the happiest if he's doing his duties. Because happiness comes from the mode of goodness. Happiness doesn't come from passion. Passion is the anxiety to get it. It drives you. But as we mentioned, that moment of happiness, it comes by. Just as quickly as you rush towards it, that quickly it's gone into the past. You know? Does that make sense? So, and ignorance, there is no such thing as happiness. You know? You know, otherwise you have the, you know, cliches about, you know, the next morning, you know, over a very difficult, how you say, cup of coffee, that the friends are talking about all the wild things you did the night before that you have no idea that you did. You know, so how is that happiness? You don't even know you're happy, you know, or you know, what do you call it? You know, you don't see it so often, but two friends are there and things are going crazy and one turns to the other, and so, are we happy yet? You know, is this what we're wanting? Is this why we came here? You know, so... You know, so it's only in the mode of goodness. So mode of goodness means performing your duties and knowledge. So whatever little bit of happiness you see in the world that people experience is because somehow or another they have done what their duty is. That's all. But it's by accident. So the Vedic cultures, why let it happen by chance? Why not let it happen by science? Right? Chance isn't science. Right? It's sold that way. But it's not science. Science is already there. The laws are there. The science is there. Follow the science, you get the results. So the Western society or the non-Vedic, it's by chance they become happy. Right? Because otherwise, they knew what they were doing, why isn't everyone happy? They would have worked this out a long time ago. Right, but it's always changing because it's just the modes of nature. By chance they do it here, it gets old, so then they try it something new, but they'll do it right. You know, so that doesn't work. Somewhere else they do it and it happened. It worked properly because they followed the rule. Then that becomes the new place to become happy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. So the two go together. You follow your duties, you're happy. You're happy, then you do your duties nicely. So they nourish each other. Is that correct? Yes.
And just a quick question. You mentioned before that the regularity brings mercury. Well, what about people that are always traveling, like sannyasis and things, and they're always in a different place?
Yeah, they're not all doing so well. Chanakya says that. Says, leaving cloth too long out in the sun, you know, when you go to dryer, that makes the cloth old. You know, a horse sitting in the stable and not going out becomes old. And a man by traveling becomes old. So the thing is, if it's understood these principles, then you try to create that regulated lifestyle where they are. You know, so you have a consistent lifestyle, then it makes it easier. But because you don't, then it doesn't work out. Therefore, there's rules like that. Persons come traveling, you greet them nicely and everything, and then they take bath, they eat, they rest and all that. Then you get down into whatever serious business either they came for, you have, and like that. Because then it makes that process work better. Because there's nothing perfect. You know? But at the same time, that traveling, that creates a freshness. You know what I'm saying? So then, what they say, then those who are not traveling tend to listen to. Because it's fresh. You know what I'm saying? So, like that. It works out. It balances. Okay? At least, or at last? Okay. At last, Yudhishthira expressed the real anxiety perturbing his mind. Or, is it that you are feeling empty due to having lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? My dear Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your having become so utterly dejected. Because he's mentioned all these things, but he knows that Arjuna wouldn't do all these things. You know. So, but these are things that could cause that kind of dejection in someone else, but not in Arjuna. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, Maharaj Yudhishthira said, but I should not have such doubts about you. Remembering the words of Narada, the following is possible, however. You think to yourself, I am devoid of consciousness, fainting because of the absence of my dearest friend at all times. That indeed can be the only cause. Otherwise, you should not have affliction in your mind. As already mentioned, question 20 was asked by Yudhishthira of Arjuna. The question has three parts. One, Yudhishthira asked after the welfare of Lord Krishna, his family, and the Yadu dynasty. Two, receiving no answer from Arjuna, Yudhishthira then anxiously inquired about his brother's welfare. Three, finally, Yudhishthira asked, or is it that you are feeling empty for all time, because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? The philosophical significance of question 20 is summarized as follows. When a civilization or person is separated from Krishna, the result is inauspiciousness. Sufferings are inflicted upon the separated souls by the Lord's material energy. What's the 1P through 21P? Purport, so. Yes, okay. But beyond the material suffering, okay, so in other words, when an individual or society is separated from the Lord, then there's always going to be inauspiciousness. So there'll always be that. Yeah. But beyond the material sufferings is the spiritual world. Their infallible entities exist in wonderful reciprocation with the Lord. Purports 22 to 44. So then there's an alternative. So we're not just saying the world's bad. We're saying that the spiritual world is actually what's good. Right? And then if we're attached to this, then we point out the weaknesses. In other words, if someone can appreciate that, the living entity is meant to serve the Lord, and that living entity is the soul, not the body, then you don't have to talk much about the problems around. But if someone's attached to those, then you may bring them up. Does that make sense? Okay. Feelings of transcendental separation of the devotee from the Lord superficially appear to be suffering. But in truth, they are the evidence of perfectional attachment to Krishna. In his purport to verse 8, Srila Prabhupada remarks, There's no difference between the Lord's self and the Lord's transcendental body. The expansions execute different activities. When the Lord, however, appears in his person as Lord Shri Krishna, his other plenary portions also join in him by his inconceivable potency called Yoga Maya. And thus, the Lord Krishna of Vrindavan is different from the Lord Krishna of Mathura or the Lord Krishna of Dwarka. The Virat Rupa of Lord Krishna is also different from him by his inconceivable potency. So he expands as everything. At the same time, they're different from him. But what's different is the mood or the manifestation, the amount of potency. But it's all him. So all that sense, it's an expansion of him, of a particular mood, or a manifestation of the amount of that mood and potency. It's still, everything is all there in the original. So all the forms are within him. So Swayam Krishna, everything is within him. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Virat Rup exhibited on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. Therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. Because we give the examples, okay, the sun and moon are the eyes of the Lord, but what are we focusing on? Sun and moon. So that's the material conception. Because it's the same Lord in the sun and moon and in the water and in fire and in everything. Mm-hmm. It is just a matter of which qualities are manifest, but it's the same person. So it says material conception because we're seeing those potencies in relationship to the forms and activities that they naturally manifest through. Right? But the focus is on the energy, not on the energetic. But the example is being given so that you are aware of the energetic. And you see the connection between all things in creation. Does that make sense? So that aspect, the part of connecting it with this, that's what's left. But where those potencies come from, the Supreme Lord, he's who is going. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like a mixed devotional service. Let's say we're cooking. So the devotional service that we've rendered, that remains eternal. But that position of identifying as a cook or being expert at cooking, that's the temporary aspect. So when you go back to Godhead, that one's left here. The other one goes with you. Does that make sense? The Lord is Kaivalya, and for him there is no difference between matter and spirit, because everything is created from him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body or accepting another body does not mean that he is like an ordinary living being. Because all it is just a manifestation of some aspect of himself. Right? Anyway. So, even there, the material, it is him anyway. But we're not seeing the him part, we're seeing the material part. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj, we need to change our vision.
Yes, changing the vision is the whole idea. That's it. So we see from the vision that the acharyas give us.
Yes.
That's why then the shastra itself is the basis, but actually the important thing is the explanation of the acharyas on that basis. Because the Veda is the way to see, but then how we will be able to do that, that's how the acharyas give us. And the Vedic includes everything within the cosmos. So, but in a relationship, you have a specific. You know, it means it's just like if you have a good friend. There's certain activities you do, certain places you do those in, certain language you use, right? Certain food, certain music, like that. All those things go, certain clothes. So, So that is then what makes it specific. So the acharyas will give us that. It means the overall understanding, yes, that will get us out of the material into the spiritual. But then, even more specific than that is then the focus on the particular mood. Because Krishna has unlimited qualities and moods. So those ones that one finds attractive, that's then where one has to focus. So that's given by the acharyas. Right? So for us, then that mood in Vrindavan, that's what's being offered. So everything will be seen from that point of view. So we'll explain things that others... We can explain sometimes more detail in an element of Vaikuntha than those who are Vaikuntha Bhaktas. Because of the Achinta Beda Veda Tattva element. And we don't have any problem. It's just that we can explain, but our taste is in a particular place. You know, just like a good cook can explain all the aspects of cooking, but they may have a certain thing that they focus on. Like, let's say they like to cook sweets, so they cook, you know, something else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. All such activities are simultaneously one and different by his inconceivable potency. When Maharaj Yudhishthira was lamenting the possibility of his disappearance, it was just in pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But factually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body. So it's not about that he left the body, because that universal form being left there, that's not actually what Yudhishthira is worrying about. It's about the association. The Lord never quits his transcendental body, as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, and they are known as mudhas. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhammas, transcendental abodes, as he left his Vishwarup in the material world. Right? So the Vishwarup stayed here, all the other forms stayed in their various realms, and he goes back to Braj. Right? But he's the source of all of them. Mm-hmm. Right? So, in other words, they're a particular aspect. Right? Just like as Vasudev, he kills the demons in Vrindavan. But it's just one of the things he does. Does that make sense? So all these different elements are there, and they're manifest at different times, and that gives that whole purview of relationships that happen in Vrindavan. Now you take one of those and emphasize it, then that becomes from another realm. You know what I'm saying? Like Radha and Krishna are together. Okay, now Radha and Krishna are together, then there's the element that they can't be together, so they're always trying to arrange, and something might get in the way, and everything like that. But the thing is it's always about Radha and Krishna. Right? So there is a consistency. But that consistency is not prominent. It's just, of course, Radha and Krishna are the ones that are going to be together. But there's all the anxiety about how they might not be. Now, if we take that element of consistency, right, and then bring that out more, then you're going to get the wives and Dwarka. Does that make sense? You emphasize it even more, then you get Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. You understand? So you're just taking one aspect, and it's the proportion of how much is emphasized. That's what makes the different realms. You know, Krishna is doing his duties, but when you take that and emphasize it, you get Ramachandra. Does that make sense? You know, you said Krishna's in Dwarka, so he's sometimes with the queens and sometimes not. So if you emphasize that aspect of him not, that ends up also in Ayodhya. You understand? So it's separation in Swakya. Does that make sense? So that's all that you're doing, is taking one thing and emphasizing it more, so that can be tasted always. So those are the expansions. So this idea, everything's in Krishna at the same time as they're separate. It's not a problem. Over the time. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Lord Ramachandra represents duty, why do we not focus?
Okay. That's the importance of the association. Just the spiritual potency of the assembly answers your own question. Because see, as we go along, right, you know, after a few, some more years, and something, oh no, I got the answer. So, there's never any questions.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jainatai
Gaurapreme.
Hare Krishna.